guys. Welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Robbie Duncan McNeil.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Here we are on a journey. We're on a journey.
We're on a journey.
Three seasons in on our journey,
of
the Voyager run.
So, I don't know why it's making me dance.
We're on a journey.
That sounds like a Brady Bunch theme song.
We're on a journey.
It does kind of.
Yeah.
Can you believe we're actually in season three, episode 7 or 8 now? This is crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah, it is. It's flying
by. It really is. Really, really is. Oh my goodness.
It's been fun so far. It's really been fun. And I'm excited.
And thanks to all our listeners for listening, this following us this entire time. That's just, I know, it's wonderful. Every week our downloads keep increasing. So and I'm just attributing this to the fact that more people are finding us. You know, there's still people now to this day, they're like, oh my gosh, I just heard about this. And so we're just so happy that you guys are joining us. And so we are now about to rewatch Future's End Part 2.
Future's End Part 2. I loved Part 1. I did too. It was one of my favorite episodes we ever did. The story was great. The adventure was a lot of fun. The complexity of the time travel and kind of connecting it to current day Earth, you know, at least in 1996, what was going on. Looking at some of the old computer monitors in Rain Robinson Science Lab with the really cheesy graphics. It was awesome. So fun.
Yeah. And so I'm excited to see what happens to the doctor. Yeah. I don't remember. And he, as we know, the last thing that we saw was the stealing of the doctor's program by Starling. So Starling now has the doctor.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see what happens to him.
I know.
I don't remember very clearly. So let's go watch part two, Robbie, and come back and review.
I can't wait.
Thanks, guys, so much. Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for What Do We Remember? Hey, guys, Robbie and I are back from watching Future's End Part 2. What a chock full of plot storyline.
Oh, my gosh.
This episode is just... it's cram packed, filled with action and
it's huge
turns and twists. It's very, and you had talked a little bit about this was originally written for a four-parter episode. I can see how everything was crammed into, you know,
into the two parts. Yeah. I read that, that this originally was conceived as like at least four parts. This was a huge,
that's incredible.
Thing. Mm-hmm. In fact, I also read that there was talk about bringing Sarah Silverman back onto Voyager as a regular.
Yeah.
That was something that was debated and I had forgotten all about that. Yeah, it's a huge episode. It's really huge. Yeah. And I was right with my background. I've got the desert road. I did remember there was a desert road. That was a nice sequence.
Good job.
Let's start with our poetry, though. Let's dive right in. Start with
you. Want me to do my limerick?
Yeah, I'll do your limerick first.
Here's my limerick for Future's End Part 2. All right. Starling's capture begins Part 2, but he's beamed back through shields. Who knew? A ruse was on. Starling's now gone. Janeway's manual launch to subdue.
Nice. That was very good. Sir. You covered a lot of ground.
I sure did.
Haikus are much simpler. They can only capture a brief moment in time.
Yes. Haikumi, sir.
Here we go. My synopsis in haiku form. Must find the time ship. Doc, foot loose and fancy free. Back to date and time.
Yes. Oh, the economy of words is just invigorating.
Yes, it really is.
What's the final stanza? Back to time.
Back, wait, back to back date and time.
Date and time. Oh, five. There because you go.
It's a
five.
It's a time. Yeah. You know, we're in a weird timeline here, and stupid Starfleet rules make us go all the way back. Like, what do they call it? A temporal.
Temporal prime directive.
Temporal prime directive. We got to go back.
Cannot violate. Cannot violate temporal prime directive. Yes. All right. This episode clearly is still written by Brandon Braga and Joe Manosky, but it is now directed by Cliff Bowl. And that's how I originally started my limerick. I said, new director to begin part two is what I
began. Funny.
But I changed it. So Cliff Bowl is now the director. And I'm wondering why they didn't feel that, why didn't they just let, you know, the director of David the first Livingston episode continue? Both? Yeah, why didn't Livingston do both?
Both of these were huge episodes. By the way, I got to say, I feel like this may be my favorite episodes. This two-parter
so
may
far?
Be my
favorite. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was fun to watch.
Yeah.
The plot was huge. The concept felt very relatable, like the technology and the way things were exploding in the late 90s with technology. Yes. Changing the world in huge ways. So this idea that someone had gotten technology from the future that they shouldn't have made a lot of sense to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's just dive right into it. Rain and Tom are sitting outside. Robbie, where was that?
Paramount Studios lot. That was on the lot out by the screen, by the Paramount Theater. They've got a little park-like area. And so we were filming.
Right.
They're right at the studios, but we were filming out at the park.
It looked like a public park from the viewpoint of, you know, when you're watching the episode. But then when I look at the tables and how nice the chairs were, I thought, that's not a public park. It's tables and chairs that they set up, or maybe they were already there.
I think they're already there.
On Paramount. Of course, since it's on the lot, you could put nicer stuff so people aren't going to steal it, right? Yeah. They're not going to jack it.
And you could see the fountain in front of the Paramount Theater that's on the lot just for screenings and, you know, for the studio screenings and things like that. They've got a big fountain. You could see that.
That opening scene when Rain is getting out of the VW bus, you're already sitting on the park tape at the park chair and table. You're working on the transistor radio or something like that to reconfigure it to make it a communication device, right?
Yes.
When she walks out, that is the snapshot. That's the snapshot. That is so not Robbie.
It's not me.
First of all, we didn't. Okay, just so people know what the heck we're talking about. Robbie has a background on.
I'm going to put it right now.
But for those people that are just listening to the podcast and don't see anything, I have to explain it to them. Robbie chose a different virtual background, which was a screenshot of Rain coming out of the bus and the back of what looks like Robbie walking sort of away. And we talked about, I said, gosh, that guy doesn't really look like you. And Robbie kept insisting, that's me. I said, boy, this guy looks shorter than you. I just don't think that's you. And he says, well, it could be the lighting is different.
There
it is. Yeah. And what we should have realized, Robbie, yes, we were fooled by the gray tank top because you are also wearing a gray tank top, right?
That's true.
But that dude is wearing khaki pants. You have dad jeans on.
I know. I should have thought jeans should have been the clue. I know.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's there the opening scene. That's her getting out. So we're in the park. Rain is very suspicious. She's like, everything's odd. She says that I call myself a secret agent, and nobody uses that term. Mm-hmm. They use the word spy. But you can see Rain and Tom bonding, which I think was such a fun arc in this two-parter with Paris and Rain. I thought it was great.
Was it really bright that day? You're squinting a lot in this episode.
So much.
You're Mr. Squint.
The whole episode, I was like... Yeah. Yeah, I have very sensitive eyes that way.
But although the sunlight was really difficult to deal with, it did really bring the blue out in your eyes.
Oh, thank you.
It made them a little bit more dreamy.
Thank you. Yeah, I was squinting a lot, but they bond. Paris says, you know, why did she become an astronomer? She says she looked at Saturn's rings with her brother when she was a kid. From a treehouse, they had a little telescope, and the Saturn rings look like pirate treasure. So it's a really nice, sweet, very personal, intimate kind of sharing. I thought that was cool. Paris is working on the car radio And he fritzes it. And Tuvok says, let's go to the observatory, use the radio dish there. And Rain says, not on an empty stomach. Let's eat some of this junk food, burritos, and all the things
that Tuvok brought back.
Yes, right? Tuvok brought all the junk food for them to eat, which I loved.
I don't know. I would think that a Vulcan would be probably vegan.
I think it was more like he didn't know what the food was, so he just ordered one of everything, and because he brought back all of the sodas and the bags of food.
I agree. Okay, so we jump back to the briefing room now. We're on the ship, and there's a whole conversation about how to stop Starling. What do we do?
Yeah,
he's going to cause this impending explosion. We need to stop him. There's an incoming transmission from Tuvok. At this point, you guys are back at Rain's lab. Paris and Rain are bonding over this coffee table book about B-movies, and they're laughing and giggling. Janeway asks if we can trust Rain. Tuvok is pretty sure that, yes, we can trust Rain.
Yeah. I remember that set, by the way, the laboratory set we built on stage, and I remember that was a very cool set.
Yeah.
This episode was really cool because we get to do scenes in sets and in locations that were just so unusual for a sci-fi show, you know.
Definitely. Was Rain's lab on stage 16 or was it on stage 9?
I thought it was on 9. My memory is that it was on 9, but it was very cool and great set decoration. All the little props and things were cool.
It looks great. Definitely. Starling's office, I'm guessing, was also on 9 somewhere, right?
That might have been on 16, yeah.
Okay. Well, the doctor and Starling are now having a conversation. Yes. The doctor diagnoses Starling as having bipolar personality disorder. I love that. And the doc has a wonderful line. I'm a doctor, not a database. When he wants to know more information, he wants the psych profiles of Captain Janeway to know his enemy better. But then the doctor sort of refuses to help him. And he says that there's nothing you can do to make me comply.
This was very cool.
Yes, using futuristic 29th century technology, Ed Begley Jr., Starling, is able to give
torture
the doctor,
him, basically.
Yeah, he is able to give the doctor the experience of pain.
Yeah,
right?
He says, I've reconfigured your tactile response sensors.
Yeah.
And then he gives him the feeling of burning. He says, that's what it feels like to burn if you were on fire. So, you know, seeing the doctor writhing on the floor. And he also tells him earlier in this scene that he's got holographic projectors all over his office from the 29th century. So far, we know that, wow, this guy can project him into his office. That's pretty cool. Because we could only do it in the sick bay. That's the only place he could be.
That's right.
24th century technology or the holodeck. We could bring him onto the
holodeck. We can put him there. Yeah. Rain calls in and she basically tell Starling, please meet me at the Metro Plaza. I don't want to come to Chronoworks headquarters. I'm afraid for my life. And Starling says, yeah, I'll send somebody. He says, no, just you. And this is basically pulling Starling into the trap that has been discussed earlier between Janeway and the crew, what they're going to do. So Starling agrees. He's like, okay. And the doctor basically says, well, I'm not going. And then all of a sudden you'd see the doctor. He does actually show up.
He does show up.
But we do cut to a scene with Chakotay and Torres in the shuttle. And they're flying down to basically intercept and beam Starling aboard.
It's a long scene. A couple things I noticed. That's our old shuttle. You know, it's not the Delta Flyer yet. So it was funny to see the old shuttle because we didn't see that a lot, you know, in the later seasons. It's pretty plain, that shuttle, the interior of the shuttle. The other thing I noticed that was funny is they're kind of flirting with each other. Again, they're, you know, Chakotay and B'Elanna are sort of getting kind of intimate. But I got to say, I didn't feel any chemistry in this scene between the characters, even though they have this, you know, very kind of personal, what would you do on Earth conversation. I was like, wow, I'm surprisingly little chemistry there.
Even I agree.
There's a little bit of flirtiness, but it didn't, it wasn't, I don't know, not much there.
Yeah. In this scene, you know, she says, what if we're stuck here? Chakotay, what if we're stuck here? We're going to have to get jobs. And then they start talking about possible jobs, right? Chakotay talks about pursuing archaeology full time. I didn't know, no one really knew anything about that until this point.
Right.
And then he says, maybe teach at a university, which is funny because in real life, that is what Robert Beltran actually ended up doing. He went to UCLA and was teaching Shakespeare at the university. So that's real life imitating art. Back down to the Metro Plaza.
By the way, the Metro Plaza location was actually the Music Center Plaza.
The Dorothy Chandler Pavilion.
Dorothy
correct?
Chandler Pavilion, yeah. The Mark Taper Forum, and the Amundsen Theater, which is where all the Broadway show tours, big shows come through Los Angeles, most of them. And I had performed at the Amundsen at the Music Center just a few years before we did this, before we did got on, started with Star Trek. I had performed at the Music Center in Into the Woods, the first national tour. So it was fun to see. Yeah, it was fun to see us on that plaza where I had spent 6 months, you know, on the LA company of Into the Woods at the theater.
Yeah.
Well, so at the Metro Plaza, the doctor gets out of the car and he's got the mobile emitter. And I had forgotten that this is the episode where he gets the holographic mobile emitter.
I was confused. I thought it was later. And I thought that he showed up with the mobile emitter on the bridge to talk about being footloose and fancy free. Like that was his lines when he said, I've been equipped with an autonomous, self-sustaining mobile holo emitter. In short, I'm footloose and fancy free. And he's very proud about that. But in my head, that entire dialogue happened on the bridge a Voyager, not here, you know? So it was a little jarring for me to see the scene. I was like, oh my goodness.
Well, they get out and the doctor's in his Starfleet outfit out on the streets, which I thought was hilarious. Yeah. And Starling threatens him and says, if your shipmates start any trouble, you'll be hollow dust. Rain appears and she wants them to walk back towards her van. And Starling insists, no, you got to come with me this way.
Yeah.
So that's very worrisome because Tuvok and Paris are waiting. They had a plan.
They had already transmitted the coordinates to Chakotay for the van. You know what I'm saying? So, but not for the sedan that Starling's guy is driving him in. So on the bridge, Janeway orders Starling to be beamed aboard Voyager, because what happens is as Chakotay and Torres are beaming Starling onto the shuttle, Starling has that futuristic tricorder. So he's now interfering with the transport, to the point that he's in the buffer. He's in the transporter buffer, but he's preventing them from rematerializing him on the shuttle, right? So with the help of Harry, they're able to rematerialize him on the transporter pad in the transporter room on the USS Voyager, which is where he passes out. And we later learn, because I thought that's so weird, but we later learn from Kes that he suffered minor synaptic stress during the extended transport, enough to cause unconsciousness, but no permanent damage.
And by the way, when this whole transport started, they were in the sedan and he starts to dematerialize. Rain sees this and is freaked out, which you would be if you see somebody you don't even know about transporter technology and they start disappearing in front of your eyes. And then the doctor starts getting punched by Dunbar, bodyguard guy. He's getting punched. It's very funny because he just gets punched over and over and over. And the doctor... Then he stops. He's like, what's going on? Like, the doctor looks at him and bam,
punch him.
Gives him one punch and knocks him out. And the doctor runs off, meets up with Rain, Paris and Tuvok. That's where he has that line you were talking about. He meets up with them and the doctor says, I've been equipped with an autonomous self-sustaining mobile holo emitter. In short, I am footloose and fancy free. Classic, classic line. Yeah. So they get Starling on board. As you said, he's in the sick bay and they realize the shuttle is going to crash.
Right, because the whole thing of trying to beam Starling aboard causes all kinds of havoc on the shuttle, and they crash and end up crash landing somewhere in Arizona.
So they wake up in the basement. They're tied up by these kind of doomsday prepper, anti-government militia sort of people. And I did read, when I was trying to look up a couple things about this episode after I watched it, I did read that when this was a much bigger four-parter, six-parter story, it was a much bigger story at one point, that anti-government storyline was really big. It was huge. It was a big part from not just part two, but it was throughout the whole thing.
Because of editing, it really seemed like an afterthought, you know?
Yeah, it was very much an afterthought.
Yeah, I mean, very ambitious episode, really, to open up all these different can of worms and plot twists, for sure. But you know, that's what you get from the mind of Braga and Manosky. You get some really crazy twists.
Well, they've got him tied up. They go in to touch B'Elanna, see what's on her head, and she fights back, and ultimately they end up calling for reinforcements. So you're like, oh boy, this is going to get, this is going to get rough. We get back in the van. We're driving. Rain is alarmed by Starling's disappearance and that the doctor
being punched
over and over. She's like,
with no evidence of injury.
She says, I love this line. I've gone out with guys who've disappeared into thin air on our first date. And the doctor goes, I assume she's speaking figuratively.
And then she goes, she calls him Mr. Leisure Suit.
Yeah.
She goes, remember that?
Yeah. Mr. Leisure Suit. And I was like, that's exactly what these uniforms are. They're leisure suits. They're like futuristic leisure suits. All these neighborhoods, by the way, that we're driving in. So the way they do this is they tow the van with like a tow truck made for filmmaking. And then they either have a camera off that tow truck or they have a camera in the car with you. Those were all streets around Paramount Studios. So we were driving very close. We would probably load up at the studio, get the whole train caravan together, and then we drive out the gate and start driving around the neighborhood. So
how does that work though? If the camera is on you guys, but a car or a person walks past, do they have to stop that person and get a release form from that person?
I think if it's,
you know what I'm saying? Like, how does that work?
Incidental stuff in the background. No,
it doesn't matter. Okay.
No, it doesn't matter.
Got you. Janeway calls Tuvok from sickbay to inform them that Chakotay and Tuvok's shuttle has gone down over Arizona. So she orders Tuvok to find them. Tuvok decides to take the doctor with him on this side away mission. Mm-hmm. And then he orders Paris and Rain to continue their mission at Chronoworks. And then we jump to sickbay when Starling wakes up. Mm-hmm. Janeway discovers why Starling wants to launch the time ship. He needs to find more technology to bring back to the 20th century to continue the rapid rising success that Chronoworks has had.
Yeah, he definitely is trying to monetize these things, but he's also like a zealot because he actually believes that he's bettering mankind. And he says at one point, he says, you know, he's cannibalized the ship as much as he can and he needs more technology. He says there's nothing left to base a commercial product anymore. And that's the technology zealot kind of mindset of, you know, confusing profit and power with bettering mankind. Maybe, maybe technology is not always bettering mankind. Maybe it's better not to move so fast was my
takeaway. Well, he clearly has developed some type of God complex now that he feels that, look, I dispense these groundbreaking or game-changing technological revolutions, and I'm the one that is facilitating that. Without me, this world is going to go into the crapper. So yeah, he believes it. We go back to the basement, but before that, there's a quick shot of the shuttle. For crashing, it looks pretty darn okay.
That was a cool shot. I like that shot. Right? I was like, to see the shuttle, it was very well done shot. Yeah, you see the shuttle. It looks okay. Just to see it in that environment, I thought it blended very, very nicely.
I like the words out of the anti-government guy. There are two forces at work in the world, the drive toward collectivity and the drive toward individuality. And then that's when you hear, the feds are coming, the feds are coming. You hear all this stuff, but we don't see it. You know, obviously, because of time and budget concerns, we don't see the feds surrounding the property, unfortunately. Yeah. But we jump back to the bus, the VW bus. Rain assesses the motley crew. I love it. She's like, the doctor, a guy with the worst taste in clothing I've ever seen. Tuvok, what a freakosaurus. Has the guy ever cracked a smile? And you, Tom Paris, sexy. In a howdy doody sort of way. And that to me is just quintessential Brandon Braga dialogue here. In a howdy doody sort of way. Pretty goofy, although sometimes I think you're the smartest man I've ever met.
I know.
All this running around you do, your mission, you're so dedicated, you know, like you care about something more than just your own little life. So she's really falling for Tom here. I mean, there's all this stuff she's just regurgitating.
She's really letting you know. Big compliments. I have to say, I was really happy with this dialogue. I mean, not just personally, but for the character, because they put Tom Paris for the first couple of years in so many situations where he was very often not doing admirable things or appearing not to be doing admirable things, doing selfish things, whatever. So to have another character, somebody especially like this, like an earth person who doesn't know anything, just sort of make these observations, was good for the audience.
It's a validation. It's really a validation that you're an honorable character. You know, you're not just you're not this grifter, you know, going through life trying to like get the best of everyone and kind of slide by and not put in the work. You're looking for the shortcut. You're not that guy. You're somebody who's actually quite upstanding in what you're doing. You're dedicated to your mission. So it's definitely it's very complimentary.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Create the deck of your dreams now at Menards. Spend less time maintaining your deck and more time enjoying it. With UltraDeck low-maintenance composite decking from Menards. It's easy to install and built to last. Plus, get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store and on Menards.com. Save big on UltraDeck. And check out more great deals happening now at Menards. Save big money at
Menards. I thought the idea of bringing this character, Rainn Robinson, and Tom Paris together for this brief romance, mm-hmm. really smart. It brought out really good qualities in Tom.
Yeah,
it was just a very interesting match, you know.
Yeah, and I justified the howdy doody line with the dad jeans. I said, yeah, his jeans are pretty howdy doody.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I'm gonna go with.
Yeah, so the bodyguard, what's his name, Dunbar, he uses a satellite sweep
scanning for Starling
mm-hmm. finds him. And he beams him back with the 29th century transport.
Through shields. He was able to beam through our shields and just pluck him out of the ship. Like nothing.
Starling comes back. Mr. Dunbar, great work. We got to get out of here. We
move back to the bus. We're back at the VW bus. Rainn basically asks Tom on a date. Then when Tom doesn't really bite, she then assumes incorrectly, "You're married." And Tom replies, "Absolutely not. Just very busy."
Yeah,
you got to get back to Mars, right? And then you say Saturn. So a lot of cute little kind of, you
it's
know,
very cute.
Dialogue.
It's very
rom-com. It's a nice
rom-com.
It's
a rom-com story. I thought
it is a rom-com. I totally agree. And if you think about it, in Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, the parallel is you are basically Captain Kirk, and she is the character of Dr. Gillian Taylor, the one scientist that he kind of has a little bit of a flirtation with, you know, and she's in charge of the marine mammals, the museum or whatever, the aquarium, right? So she's the marine biologist. And so now you have Rainn playing Catherine Hicks' role as the science, woman of science, and you are Captain Kirk. You're having this little rom-com moment with her. But that's interrupted when your tricorder beeps and you know that there are tachyon emissions coming from a semi that's leaving Chronoworks. So we all assume the time ship is being moved. Mm-hmm. And that's when you guys chase after them. We run back to the basement where the feds have now surrounded the property. And it was cool how you could hear everything. You know, we've got you surrounded. And all of a sudden, and then you're like, who the hell are you two? And then you hear Tuvok's voice.
Right.
Please step back. And then there's phaser fire, gunfire. And the greatest line of all is when the anti-government guy that's looking out the door goes, he comes in and he says, they've got lasers. He says that. He goes, a black man and some bald guy is what he says. Like, and I just that Bob is some bald guy. Right?
Some bald guy.
Yeah.
So they run downstairs and the doctor walks in at the top of the steps and they all start firing. Bang, bang, bang. And you see the gunshots going through the wall. But obviously the doctor is not getting injured. He just stood there and let it all happen.
Oh, yeah. Great lines. The divine intervention line is unlikely, that one. And then suffice it to say, I'm making a house call, what he says to Chakotay. Like, they can't believe. Because at this point, they don't know why the doctor is even here. Because they don't know he has a mobile emitter on. They're just confused. They're like, how is this happening? This is very confusing to them.
Yeah.
The VW bus is now following the semi-truck. And you guys are not really, it doesn't seem like anyone has any speed. Like the truck looks like it's going slow. The VW bus looks like it's going kind of slow, right? Relatively speaking. Janeway Basic, she talks to Paris, but then she then talks to Rain. So Rain is talking to Janeway. Janeway tells Tom that the weapons are offline and the shuttle was still being repaired by Torres. So you're on your own. You may be the only one to save the world.
So we have a little phaser shootout. I'm leaning out the window. Tom Paris leaning out the window, fires a phaser, hits the wheel, and it skids and slides.
Hits the flap, actually, right? I think it hits the flap or something.
Hits the flap.
We think that he's disabled. Yeah.
We think so, but we also skid to a stop and stall. The van won't start. And we look up the truck is headed right back towards us. Mm-hmm. And it's about to smash into us when all of a sudden we see the shuttle fly in and fire phasers at the truck.
At the semi,
blows it up, and it comes and it obviously stops, and we are saved.
Poor Dunbar. That's the end of Dunbar, though, right?
Yes.
I think Dunbar's done. So.
I think he's done. It looked like he was done. It blew up pretty good.
Yeah, I felt bad. Like, you know, he's just doing his job.
I do remember, by the way, I remember going out there and shooting that, and we did have some of the dialogue scenes and some of the driving stuff. But they had a lot more work. I remember going out there and thinking, oh, wow, they have a lot more on the call sheet than our scenes. And it was all the driving stuff. That stuff takes a long time to do it safely and get the stunt drivers in and reset the truck and skid the truck. And I noticed when it skid, you could see some other skid marks on the road.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this was probably take 4 or 5. Like they tried to get just right.
Did you drive at all? Did you do any of the, you were sitting next to Rain.
Yeah,
did she drive at all? Did she drive some of it? Or no?
I don't think so. I think it was always a stunt double. Stunt they driver. Had a lot more work on the call sheet and schedule than, you know, we probably worked half the day, but then they did all the driving and stunt work for the other half of the day.
That makes sense. In the wreckage of the semi, we now discover that there's no time ship. It was just a temporal transponder set to give off tachyon signals. Mm-hmm. And we realize that we've been had. Starling is launching from a different site. We flash to the cockpit, right?
Well, yeah, we flash to the cockpit and we see it crash out of the
ChronoWorks building, right? And I love how they don't use impulse drive. They use hyper impulse drive in the future. So that was kind of cool. But cool shot with all the glass and debris coming out after it flew out.
Bust through the windows. And then back on our ship, Janeway says, she's got an idea. She says, I love what she says to you. Take the bridge, Mr. Kim. It should be second nature to you by now.
She leaves the bridge because the photon torpedoes, we can arm them, but they can't fire. So the launch activation sequencers are not responding. Kim suggests rewiring the fire command through the helm. Captain's like, no, that's going to take too much time. I'm going to do this for a manual launch. Very dangerous. Harry complains and Janeway sort of dismisses him. By this time, Chakotay has basically beamed. He hasn't beamed back yet. He informs Paris that he's going to beam him back onto the shuttle is what it is, right?
Yep.
That's the scene. And that's where we have the goodbye. And I love the dialogue here. I really do. On the desert road, Rain says, your spaceship's waiting. Tom says, I've never met anyone. I'm going to do your voice. I've never met anyone quite like you. And I don't think I ever will. Rain says, same here. Say hi to Saturn for me. And then Paris goes, I will. And then the big smooch, and that's it. That's your goodbye scene.
It was a very sweet goodbye scene.
It was. It was rom-com all the way.
All the way. And then we get back to the ship, and the band's back together. Everybody's coming under the bridge. I got my fancy shirt.
I'm no longer acting captain. So Harry Kim hands over acting captain back to Chakotay. He tells Chakotay Janeway is attempting a manual launch. Tuvok says Starling is powering his temporal field generator and he's going to be able to open a rift within seconds. And Kim says the field he's creating is unstable. B'Elanna, like everyone has a line here. B'Elanna goes, well, if he enters the rift like this, the time ship will create a temporal explosion. Tuvok is very, you know, practical and says, well, the events are occurring just as Braxton predicted. The disaster may well be inevitable. And Chakotay, the most brash line of all, says, fate Tuvok. It was so Shakespearean. Fate Tuvok. Yeah, he's like, fate Tuvok. I won't accept that. Close to you like that?
Fate I did. Tuvok. I had the same moment.
Fate Tuvok. Fate Tuvok. I won't accept that. close to within 10 kilometers. We'll ram him if we have to. And Paris says, aye, sir. So that was very bold, right? To make that decision.
Yes. And Janeway's in the tube.
And Chakotay tries to tell Starling one last time, pull away from the rift. He's like, yeah, well, right. How are you going to stop me? Your weapons are down. And that's when we launch the photon torpedo. Janeway's blown back. She's got burns on her face from it, right? Mm-hmm. And then we think that's it. And that now we're stuck in the 20th century.
Well, wait a minute. She fires the tube.
Yes.
She fires the from the tube, manual launch on the photon torpedo.
Right.
Fire. And it cuts into Starling in his ship, happy. He thinks he's leaving. And all of a sudden he sees on the radar the beep, 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 like this. And he goes, uh-oh.
Yeah. Does he say, uh-oh?
Yeah, he goes, uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
It was very funny. And then he dies.
Was similar to when Michael McKean's character of Fear was just about to be eliminated. His last words were, drat. Remember that? Yeah, says drat. So that was Starling's version of drat.
Yes, it was.
Uh-oh. Right.
Uh-oh.
So we think everything's done and that we're kind of stuck in the 20th century, but then the rift reopens and something's coming out. Guess what? It's Braxton. Braxton then informs us that, that he's scanned time with his sensors. And
I like Braxton, by the way. Yeah. I think he was great.
He was a good actor. Very good actor.
To be able to pull off the homeless guy in part one with all that.
Yeah. You know.
Crazy acting.
Yeah, it was a tour de force for him as a guest spot.
It was great.
For sure. But then, of course, in this reality, he never experienced.
Didn't even know
same
us.
Didn't know that we did. He didn't even know us. Yeah, it was clueless. And good for him that he didn't have to deal with all that. And he says, okay, so I've come here to pull you back to where you're supposed to be. You're supposed to be in the 24th century. And Janeway's like, wait a minute. Can you just leave us here and just put us in the 24th century? We've been trying to get back to Earth. And that's when he says, I'm sorry, I can't violate the temporal prime directive. And everyone goes, wah, wah,
no,
wah. No. The collective no of all of us. Oh, so sad.
Dang temporal prime directive.
I know. But then we end up in the mess hall. It was kind of weird. Like the Janeway calls everyone to the mess hall for a toast to the future. And I guess that's her way of just sort of saying, look, guys, I know we're right back to the Delta Quadrant. I'm so sorry. Let's just move on, have a drink, and head back, resume our course back to the Alpha Quadrant. The Doctor and Torres talk about his mobile emitter. And now here's the moment that I'm talking about. Paris is staged behind Torres.
Right here.
And typically when you see Torres, she's usually next to Harry. Whether it's in the briefing room or in engineering, Harry and Torres are always kind of together. But this is the first time you see Paris and Torres. And I'll be honest, you guys look good together. I was like, hey, this is okay. All right. Yeah. So this is a bit of foreshadowing.
My heart was broken from rain.
Is that?
And so you felt all the love feelings.
Okay.
And that's what you were seeing happening.
All right. That's what I'm seeing.
It wasn't for Bellana yet. And this is true of our characters. This is true of life. We all become the people we are because of past relationships and past.
Correct.
Tom had to go through his heart being broken with rain all the other, whatever he went through to get ready for Bellana.
So for me, it was a perfect foreshadowing moment. I did notice that too. The funny moment was Janeway's facial reaction. Is that what you're going to say when the doctor suggests that the doctor suggests he needs his own quarters.
Yes.
And Janeway's like, well, let's take it one step at a time. And she does this little goofy, like, kind of like thing with her eyes. And she walks off camera right there, which was great. I love that. That was fun. What did you, what were you going to say about that scene?
Well, I think one of the greatest lines in Star Trek history that Tom got from Rain when she was talking about Mr. Leisure Suit and Tuvok's a real freakosaurus.
Okay.
But Tom thinks he's hung on to that because of his feelings for Rain. And so he wants to use proper, slang from the 90s.
Yeah.
1990s, which everybody said freakosaurus, right?
Everybody said no one ever
in real life except on our show. So the last line I think of the episode is Tom saying to Tuvok, oh, Tuvok, you're a real freakosaurus.
And this has been my criticism of this episode before I rewatched this for many years, I kept saying Voyager could have been a lot funnier. For instance, who thinks you're a real Freakosaurus is funny? I don't. I would always say that from this episode. And maybe we can ask why this was written in this way. We can find out that
I think it has to do with a slang thing. And
I guess, but nobody uses that slang in 1996, though. That's my point. No one says that. I don't
know if anyone ever used that slang, did they?
Ever. Is that a word that anyone ever used? No, I think
it's a cute word that Rain came up with. She invented her own word, Mr. Leisure Suit, Mr. Freakosaurus.
Yes.
And then Tom liked Rain, so he's like, I'm going to hang on to that.
But I do want to rewind a little bit where Tuvok calls Paris out on his alleged familiarity with the 20th century, almost getting them in trouble, where they almost didn't survive.
They're like, so really? Mr. Expert?
Yes, but I love that Secret he's giving agent you crap like and, that. Yeah, but he doesn't do that normally. That character, Tuvok, is so straight-laced.
Yeah.
He doesn't joke around like that. Yeah. And I love that moment, which then continues my observation that pairing is wonderful. I love Tuvok and Paris together. It's the futuristic odd couple.
Yeah, for sure.
I loved it. Do you have a different theme for this episode compared to...
Yeah, here's my theme. Starfleet rules are dumb because we could have gotten home with Braxton. So my theme is stupid Starfleet. Why don't you let us go home? You have a whole time rift, spatial rift. Just take us home, dude.
Yeah. Okay.
That's my theme. Starfleet rule, time rules. Time, what are they called? The temporal prime directives. Temporal prime directives are dumb.
Okay.
That's my theme. What's your theme?
I have nothing to add to that. I'm going to leave it at that.
My actual theme that I was going down, I was thinking about before I wrote down temporal prime directives are dumb is I think zealots of any kind, like that idea came to mind. Zealots like Starling with his technology power trip, or the zealots of the anti-government militia, people who just get like tunnel vision about some aspect in life, lose the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is, timelines, these various timelines. And like, that's a much bigger, broader, more meaningful way, in my opinion, to look at life and look at the world rather than just shrinking it down to your own selfish kind of zealotry about a singular issue or a singular
thing. Okay, I'll buy that. So really the lesson, to encapsulate what you said, the lesson, this is a cautionary tale to those who choose to follow extremism.
Yeah.
For those who really make extreme behavior, they're, you know, they follow the church of extremism, basically.
Yeah. I think Starling did that with his technology.
He definitely did. And and you're right. The anti-government people, they did it with theirs, right? Yeah. Same thing. It's us against them, right? So we have to be subversive. We have to overthrow the government, you know?
Yeah.
And this is our whole soul existence.
Yeah.
Too extreme, right? Same thing with Starling. So great. That's a wonderful.
And the other theme is don't be a Freakosaurus.
Don't be a Freakosaurus.
don't do it. Don't be a Freakosaurus. All right. It's not cool.
It's not groovy when you're
It's not groovy. And that's for secret agents only.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey guys, thank you. thanks for tuning into this episode, or the two part, our review of part two of Future Zen.
Such a fun trip. Both parts phenomenal.
Robbie, you got a lot to do. You got to go down on the away mission. You weren't left on the ship like I was. And then you got to do a lot of stuff. So it was a great episode.
Or it's a great
character development episode for Paris, for sure.
Great episode for every character, I thought. Even
okay.
You got to sit in the captain's chair. That's a huge step.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Step. I guess that is a plus. I did get to sit there. So I will look at the glasses half full. So it was good for Kim too. Okay.
Great.
All right. Next week, we're going to be reviewing and recapping the episode Warlord. This is I'm pretty sure this is the big Jennifer Lean Kes episode. So, excited to tackle that one. But thank you guys so much for tuning into our discussion of Future Zen Part 2. See you next week.
Thanks, guys. See you next week.